Live to see it, friends. You're listening to The World Transformed 1.5 on Fast Forward Radio. I'm Phil Bauermaster, and I'm pleased to welcome you to this program where tonight we're going to take a preliminary look at the technological singularity. Now, the technological singularity is one of the core topics of The World Transformed. We discussed it directly and indirectly in several of the programs that made up the original series. I've already mentioned it numerous times in The World Transformed 1.5, and yes, we'll be talking about it a lot more before this series is through. And as you might predict, it will be a major topic of discussion in The World Transformed 2. The best and most basic definition of what we mean by the technological singularity can be found in an essay written by Werner Vinge in 1993. Vinge is a well-known science fiction writer and is a retired professor of mathematics at San Diego State University. There are actually many earlier philosophical ponderings that hint at the singularity, but Vinge was the first to describe the idea that we recognize today as the singularity, and he was the first to give it that name. In his essay, Vinge describes a coming change which is, quote, comparable to the rise of human life on Earth. The precise cause of this change, he explains, is the imminent creation by technology of entities with greater than human intelligence. Vinge continues, from the human point of view, this change will be a throwing away of all the previous rules, perhaps in the blink of an eye, an exponential runaway beyond any hope of control. Developments that were thought that might only happen in a million years, if ever, will likely happen in the next century. I'll note here that in a footnote, Vinge references a short story by Greg Bear, one of my favorite stories, Blood Music, where this transformation takes place in a matter of hours. Reading more from Vinge's essay, he says, I think it's fair to call this event a singularity. It is a point where our old models must be discarded and a new reality rules. As we move closer to this point, it will loom vaster and vaster over human affairs, till the notion becomes a commonplace. Yet, when it finally happens, it may still be a great surprise and a greater unknown. Vinge's definition is classified as being part of the event horizon school of defining the singularity. The other schools include the accelerating change and the intelligence explosion schools. We'll get into all three of these in more details in the coming weeks. There's something to be said in favor of each. But before we talk about any of those, I want to talk about the technological singularity as a human phenomenon, which it most assuredly will be, even if it means the end of humanity as we know it. This series of programs is called The World Transformed, and there is no hyperbole in that title. We are witnesses to the dawn of the greatest period of transformation in human history. We've had other transformations, but nothing like the one we're in now. 200 years ago, people started making the move from farms to factories. Over that 200-year period, we've gone from quill pens to iPads, from sailing ships to space shuttles. 200 years ago, there was no Facebook, Google, email, internet, cable TV, regular TV, radio, telephone, or even, not that we think about it much these days, telegraph. There were no trains, refrigerators, cars, light bulbs, bicycles, video games, microwaves, airplanes, iPods, or movie theaters. 200 years ago, a really cutting-edge high-tech career was blacksmith. The height of medical technology did not include aspirin, vaccinations, x-rays, antibiotics, or even anesthesia. 200 years ago, the vast majority of the world's population were subjects of kings or emperors, and a significant percentage of the world population were legally classified as private property, human beings owned by other human beings. Over that time, our world has been utterly transformed, but those changes are barely a blip compared to what's coming. 10,000 years ago, our ancestors began to make the transition from pre-civilization to civilization, from earthen mounds to pyramids, from cave paintings to cathedrals, from fireside rituals to literature, art, philosophy, engineering, medicine, law, technology, and science. 10,000 years ago, our world was transformed beyond recognition, quite literally beyond what people living in earlier eras could even begin to imagine. And yet, that change 10,000 years ago is a hiccup, a glitch, a rounding error compared to what's coming. 6 million years ago, our ancestors reached the end of a difficult road. 6 million years ago, the bipeds that would eventually become human beings fully and finally split from the bipeds that would eventually become chimpanzees. Now, think about a chimpanzee, and then think about yourself. Of course, there are some similarities, some very important similarities. But think for a moment, consider just for a moment the vast chasm of difference that lies between you and a chimp. The transformation that's coming will not be like the leap from pre-industrial civilization to industrial civilization, nor will it be like the shift from pre-civilized humanity to civilized humanity. The transformation that's coming, not in 6 million years, not in 10,000 years, and probably in considerably less than 200 years, seeing as it's already well underway, it's going to be more like bridging the gap from chimpanzee to human being. And yes, right now, on this side of the chasm we're about to cross, we are the chimps. We are witnesses and more than witnesses. We are participants in the greatest transformation of them all, or at least the greatest one so far. What will we become? We can't say, but we've been working on it for 6 million years. That 6 million year and counting process from proto-human intelligence to greater than human intelligence reflects what I've named the human imperative, which states that human beings are essentially reconfigurers of the universe in search of an optimal configuration. If we do the singularity right, greater than human intelligence will lead us, if not to that final optimal configuration, at least to a world much closer to it than we are now. But we can't describe that world, and there's a simple reason why. If the first single-celled organism had been capable of thinking, it might have imagined, if you gave it a hint, that its descendants would eventually evolve into something called human beings, that the primary advantage of being a human being would be a vastly expanded capacity for finding food. And yes, that is an advantage we have over single-celled organisms, but I think we can all agree that, from where we sit, that advantage misses the point by a fairly significant margin. Likewise, from where I sit, I can assert that the end game for the human imperative is a vastly expanded capacity for and realization of human understanding, capability, and happiness. And yes, our optimal or closer to optimal configuration of the universe will provide those things. But it will provide so much more. If we as a species continue in the direction that we're currently going, we will at some point achieve the most wonderful world imaginable. At that point, we will either carry on in the direction of improvements towards an unimaginably wonderful world or a newly defined most wonderful world imaginable, provided courtesy of a great leap forward in our ability to imagine. Trying to define the most wonderful world imaginable is challenge enough. If I try to tell you anything about an unimaginably wonderful world, I'm in the position of that single-celled organism attempting to wrap its metaphorical head around string theory or a Mozart aria, or even, keeping it within that creature's sphere of interest, a pint of Haagen-Dazs. It just can't be done. So we have to stick with what we've got, even though it is, at best, the faintest shadow of what the reality will be. Just to reiterate, what we've got is a vastly expanded capacity for and realization of human understanding, capability, and happiness. So we'll all be smarter, we'll all be more capable, and we'll all be happier. And by the way, that's a lot smarter, a lot more capable, and a lot happier. Some might want to argue that third point. After all, haven't people always been happy and unhappy? Isn't it fair to say that our modern technological society has brought as much grief and misery as it has goodness? Weren't, say, our hunter-gatherer ancestors just as happy as we are today? To those questions, I would have to say yes, no, and definitely not. Yes, there have always been happy and unhappy people. No, technology has not brought as much grief and misery as it has goodness. Granted, it has brought a lot of grief and misery. But keep in mind that we are reconfigurers of the universe. Each new configuration seeks to build on improvements from the past. Our aim, however misguided our attempts to achieve it might be, is to increase the amount of human understanding, capability, and happiness. We get it wrong a lot. A lot. But we get it right more often. Besides, if technology really brought more misery than happiness, we would see massive efforts to relinquish and suppress it. But those movements, which do exist, are, by and large, fringe affairs. No, the hunter-gatherers were not as happy as we are. I would venture to guess that they had pretty much the same capacity for happiness that we have, but daily hand-to-mouth survival tends to limit opportunities for exploring that capacity. Many of them lived under constant threat of being eaten by predators. Oh, and their chances of being killed by one of their fellow human beings were about 20 times as great as what we face today. It wasn't quite the idyllic existence many like to picture. So we'll be happier. Why? Because our material needs will be met better? Well, yeah. Maybe money doesn't buy happiness, but not having to worry about money could sure buy a lot of peace of mind for a lot of folks. It's like our ancestors and being eaten. Take another item off the list of human woes, and you've got a happier human population. Or put it this way, take your time machine back to the Middle Ages, find some locals, and explain to them that in the era you're from, most people live better than the king does in their day. What do they think? Will people be happier in such a world? I think they would laugh at the question. The answer is so obvious. Likewise, if we had even a rough approximation of what life will be like for people in the future, we would be equally amused at the suggestion that those folks might be less happy than we are. So, what will their lives be like? Again, this is just a sketch. They will be able to do more and understand more. They will be physically perfect, healthier than we are, as well as stronger and less prone to injury or illness. Their lives will go on indefinitely, and they will be young and healthy throughout. They will live in what we would take for unbelievable luxury and opulence, although they won't see it that way. Their improved understanding of how the world works, coupled with their vastly improved technology, will give them the ability to perform amazing feats, things that today can be done only in science fiction and fantasy stories. I'm not going to use my favorite tagline to describe these people, for those who know what that is. Not this time. I'll save that for later. Suffice it to say that they will be to us what we are to proto-chimpanzees, and then some. Their lives will be unimaginable to us, these beneficiaries of not only an explosion of intelligence, but an explosion of capability, of purpose, of abundance, and of happiness. That's where the singularity is taking us. We might almost be jealous of these incredible beings, but it's bad form to be jealous of your own children. And it's downright crazy to be jealous of your future self. We'll be back on with an archive show tomorrow evening, the now long-awaited program from 2008 discussing Star Trek technologies in our world today. Fast Forward Radio will be on live Wednesday evening with our special guest, Alvis Bridges, our good friend Alvis Bridges, talking about the future of Facebook. And Saturday night, not 1 week from tonight, but 1 week from yesterday, we'll be back with the next installment of The World Transformed 1.5. I hope you'll be able to join us for all of our upcoming programs. And until next time, live to see it.
Listening to The World Transformed on Fast Forward Radio. If you missed tonight's edition, don't worry. It's about to replay, starting right now.
Live to see it, friends. You're listening to The World Transformed 1.5 on Fast Forward Radio. I'm Phil Bauermaster, and I'm pleased to welcome you to this program where tonight we're going to take a preliminary look at the technological singularity. Now, the technological singularity is one of the core topics of The World Transformed. We discussed it directly and indirectly in several of the programs that made up the original series. I've already mentioned it numerous times in The World Transformed 1.5, and yes, we'll be talking about it a lot more before this series is through, and as you might predict, it will be a major topic of discussion in The World Transformed 2. The best and most basic definition of what we mean by the technological singularity can be found in an essay written by Werner Vinge in 1993. Vinge is a well-known science fiction writer and is a retired professor of mathematics at San Diego State University. There are actually many earlier philosophical ponderings that hint at the singularity, but Vinci was the first to describe the idea that we recognize today as the singularity, and he was the first to give it that name. In his essay, Vinci describes a coming change which is, quote, comparable to the rise of human life on Earth. The precise cause of this change, he explains, is the imminent creation by technology of entities with greater than human intelligence. Vinci continues, from the human point of view, this change will be a throwing away of all the previous rules, perhaps in the blink of an eye, an exponential runaway beyond any hope of control. Developments that were thought that might only happen in a million years, if ever, will likely happen in the next century. I'll note here that in a footnote, Vinci references a short story by Greg Bear, one of my favorite stories, Blood Music, where this transformation takes place in a matter of hours. Reading more from Vinci's essay, he says, I think it's fair to call this event a singularity. It is a point where our old models must be discarded and a new reality rules. As we move closer to this point, it will loom vaster and vaster over human affairs, till the notion becomes a commonplace. Yet, when it finally happens, it may still be a great surprise and a greater unknown. Vinci's definition is classified as being part of the event horizon school of defining the singularity. The other schools include the accelerating change and the intelligence explosion schools. We'll get into all three of these in more details in the coming weeks. There's something to be said in favor of each. But before we talk about any of those, I want to talk about the technological singularity as a human phenomenon, which it most assuredly will be, even if it means the end of humanity as we know it. This series of programs is called The World Transformed, and there is no hyperbole in that title. We are witnesses to the dawn of the greatest period of transformation in human history. We've had other transformations, but nothing like the one we're in now. 200 years ago, people started making the move from farms to factories. Over that 200-year period, we've gone from quill pens to iPads, from sailing ships to space shuttles. 200 years ago, there was no Facebook, Google, email, internet, cable TV, regular TV, radio, telephone, or even, not that we think about it much these days, telegraph. There were no trains, refrigerators, cars, light bulbs, bicycles, video games, microwaves, airplanes, iPods, or movie theaters. 200 years ago, our really cutting-edge high-tech career was blacksmith. The height of medical technology did not include aspirin, vaccinations, x-rays, antibiotics, or even anesthesia. 200 years ago, the vast majority of the world's population were subjects of kings or emperors, and a significant percentage of the world population were legally classified as private property, human beings owned by other human beings. Over that time, our world has been utterly transformed, but those changes are barely a blip compared to what's coming. 10,000 years ago, our ancestors began to make the transition from pre-civilization to civilization, from earthen mounds to pyramids, from cave paintings to cathedrals, from fireside rituals to literature, art, philosophy, engineering, medicine, law, technology, and science. 10,000 years ago, our world was transformed beyond recognition, quite literally beyond what people living in earlier eras could even begin to imagine. And yet, that change 10,000 years ago is a hiccup, a glitch, a rounding error compared to what's coming. 6 million years ago, our ancestors reached the end of a difficult road. 6 million years ago, the bipeds that would eventually become human beings fully and finally split from the bipeds that would eventually become chimpanzees. Now, think about a chimpanzee, and then think about yourself. Of course, there are some similarities, some very important similarities. But think for a moment, consider just for a moment the vast chasm of difference that lies between you and a chimp. The transformation that's coming will not be like the leap from pre-industrial civilization to industrial civilization, nor will it be like the shift from pre-civilized humanity to civilized humanity. The transformation that's coming, not in 6 million years, not in 10,000 years, and probably in considerably less than 200 years, seeing as it's already well underway, it's going to be more like bridging the gap from chimpanzee to human being. And yes, right now, on this side of the chasm we're about to cross, we are the chimps. We are witnesses and more than witnesses. We are participants in the greatest transformation of them all, or at least the greatest one so far. What will we become? We can't say, but we've been working on it for 6 million years. That 6 million year and counting process from proto-human intelligence to greater than human intelligence reflects what I've named the human imperative, which states that human beings are essentially reconfigurers of the universe in search of an optimal configuration. If we do the singularity right, greater than human intelligence will lead us, if not to that final optimal configuration, at least to a world much closer to it than we are now. But we can't describe that world, and there's a simple reason why. If the first single-celled organism had been capable of thinking, it might have imagined, if you gave it a hint, that its descendants would eventually evolve into something called human beings, that the primary advantage of being a human being would be a vastly expanded capacity for finding food. And yes, that is an advantage we have over single-celled organisms, but I think we can all agree that, from where we sit, that advantage misses the point by a fairly significant margin. Likewise, from where I sit, I can assert that the end game for the human imperative is a vastly expanded capacity for and realization of human understanding, capability, and happiness. And yes, our optimal or closer to optimal configuration of the universe will provide those things. But it will provide so much more. If we as a species continue in the direction that we're currently going, we will at some point achieve the most wonderful world imaginable. At that point, we will either carry on in the direction of improvements towards an unimaginably wonderful world or a newly defined most wonderful world imaginable, provided courtesy of a great leap forward in our ability to imagine. Trying to define the most wonderful world imaginable is challenge enough. If I try to tell you anything about an unimaginably wonderful world, I'm in the position of that single-celled organism attempting to wrap its metaphorical head around string theory or a Mozart aria, or even, keeping it within that creature's sphere of interest, a pint of Häagen-Dazs. It just can't be done. So we have to stick with what we've got, even though it is, at best, the faintest shadow of what the reality will be. Just to reiterate, what we've got is a vastly expanded capacity for and realization of human understanding, capability, and happiness. So we'll all be smarter, we'll all be more capable, and we'll all be happier. And by the way, that's a lot smarter, a lot more capable, and a lot happier. Some might want to argue that third point. After all, haven't people always been happy and unhappy? Isn't it fair to say that our modern technological society has brought as much grief and misery as it has goodness? Weren't, say, our hunter-gatherer ancestors just as happy as we are today? To those questions, I would have to say yes, no, and definitely not. Yes, there have always been happy and unhappy people. No, technology has not brought as much grief and misery as it has goodness. Granted, it has brought a lot of grief and misery. But keep in mind that we are reconfigurers of the universe. Each new configuration seeks to build on improvements from the past. Our aim, however misguided our attempts to achieve it might be, is to increase the amount of human understanding, capability, and happiness. We get it wrong a lot. A lot. But we get it right more often. Besides, if technology really brought more misery than happiness, we would see massive efforts to relinquish and suppress it. But those movements, which do exist, are, by and large, fringe affairs. No, the hunter-gatherers were not as happy as we are. I would venture to guess that they had pretty much the same capacity for happiness that we have, but daily hand-to-mouth survival tends to limit opportunities for exploring that capacity. Many of them lived under constant threat of being eaten by predators. Oh, and their chances of being killed by one of their fellow human beings were about 20 times as great as what we face today. It wasn't quite the idyllic existence many like to picture. So we'll be happier. Why? Because our material needs will be met better? Well, yeah. Maybe money doesn't buy happiness, but not having to worry about money could sure buy a lot of peace of mind for a lot of folks. It's like our ancestors and being eaten. Take another item off the list of human woes and you've got a happier human population. Or put it this way, take your time machine back to the Middle Ages, find some locals, and explain to them that in the era you're from, most people live better than the king does in their day. What do they think? Will people be happier in such a world? I think they would laugh at the question. The answer is so obvious. Likewise, if we had even a rough approximation of what life will be like for people in the future, we would be equally amused at the suggestion that those folks might be less happy than we are. So, what will their lives be like? Again, this is just a sketch. They will be able to do more and understand more. They will be physically perfect, healthier than we are, as well as stronger and less prone to injury or illness. Their lives will go on indefinitely, and they'll be young and healthy throughout. They will live in what we would take for unbelievable luxury and opulence, although they won't see it that way. Their improved understanding of how the world works, coupled with their vastly improved technology, will give them the ability to perform amazing feats, things that today can be done only in science fiction and fantasy stories. I'm not going to use my favorite tagline to describe these people, for those who know what that is. Not this time. I'll save that for later. Suffice it to say that they will be to us what we are to proto-chimpanzees, and then some. Their lives will be unimaginable to us, these beneficiaries of not only an explosion of intelligence, but an explosion of capability, of purpose, of abundance, and of happiness. That's where the singularity is taking us. We might almost be jealous of these incredible beings, but it's bad form to be jealous of your own children. And it's downright crazy to be jealous of your future self. We'll be back on with an archive show tomorrow evening, the now long-awaited program from 2008 discussing Star Trek technologies in our world today. Fast Forward Radio will be on live Wednesday evening with our special guest, Alvis Bridges, our good friend Alvis Bridges, talking about the future of Facebook. And Saturday night, not 1 week from tonight, but 1 week from yesterday, we'll be back with the next installment of The World Transformed 1.5. I hope you'll be able to join us for all of our upcoming programs. And until next time, live to see it.